Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 15 of our live monthly Q&A with Sinton's Wills Trust and Estates team. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sinton's, and this is our December edition. Our speaker today, you heard from him in his debut last month on the Q&A, is Edward Pattinson, who is a trainee solicitor in the Wills Trust and Estates team here at Sinton. So we're delighted to welcome him back. Our questions are there in front of you. Same format as with all our previous 14 sessions. We are answering three questions that you've put to us over the course of the last month. So I'm going to pass you over to Edward now to say good morning, and then I'm going to read out the first question for him. Edward, good morning, and over to you.
Thanks, David. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, it's good to take the helm this time with the Q&A. We've got some good questions here, so it's good to be answering these. So David's got the questions, so I think it's time to answer the first one.
Okay, so question one, my husband and I own our home as joint tenants. Is it possible for us to change the ownership of our home to avoid care home fees in the future?
Yeah, so good question. So this is commonly asked question, and an increasing amount of people are taking steps to sort of protect their assets from being used for care home fee funding. So the question is, why are people looking into this? Well, if you move into residential care or a nursing home, then it is likely you'll have to pay for your own care fees if you are assessed by the council as having assets such as, you know, savings, investments, property, all those sorts of things valued over a specific threshold. And this is currently £23,250. So it's quite low. But in terms of how your property ties in, because I think this is what you're asking with the question, is typically couples own their home as joint tenants. And that just means on the first death, the property, subject to any mortgage, passes to the survivor. And that usually works pretty well. But if the survivor in residential care, then the property is fully accessible for care home fee funding because it fully belongs to you now, that the property is fully yours. So in short, you'd need to pay your own care fees going forward, and your property is potentially on the table to help fund that. Obviously, you want to avoid this situation, and it can potentially be avoided. So possible solution here is, as a couple, you make wills incorporating a trust for the survivor rather than an absolute gift. So, you know, when you make an absolute gift, that means deceased is passing full property, absolute, over to the survivor. But with the result of putting it in the trust, it means after the first of you dies, then their share of the property passes into a trust. So the key thing here to remember is, just because you put it in a trust, it doesn't mean it's just locked away and no one will benefit from it. You know, you can benefit from the property at the same time whilst having that protection from the trust. So the trust, you know, can benefit the survivor during their lifetime and then thereafter to whoever after that. So that means, you know, if your husband died, he passes it into a trust, then you could, as the survivor, continue to live in the property rent-free for the remainder of your life before it then passes to other beneficiaries. And you can choose who these beneficiaries are. Usually people might choose their children. So when your life interest ends, typically when you die, then the property would then be available for the children. So the way I like to think of it is that the deceased half of the property is in this sort of protective bubble, and it's completely separate to the survivor's half. And so it, you know, it can't be touched in that situation. So it is protected. And the reason why you're doing this is that one half of the value of the property from the deceased can potentially be excluded from being considered for care home fee funding. That's the key bit. So, and that's because it's in a trust. So that can sway the outcome quite a lot, and it can be a huge benefit. Obviously, there are considerations at play, and one thing to consider is, you know, if you and your husband both require care in your lifetimes, so you're both alive and you both require care, then a will trust would not offer that same protection against care home fees because the trust isn't going to come into effect until the first of you dies. So whilst you're both alive, you know, it's pretty much dormant. It's not going to kick in until the first of you dies. That being generally nothing really to worry about. You know, it's whilst you're both alive, you can generally care for each other. And if you really need to, you could get care within the home to support you both rather than going into residential care. So all in all, really, it is potentially possible to protect against care fees. It's definitely potentially possible using a will trust, but you'll need to just carefully consider this with a solicitor. So go to your solicitor, let them know the assets that you have, let them know your situation, and then based on those circumstances, you can be advised on, you know, the risks and rewards. So it's definitely something to look into. So I hope that's useful. It's now time for the second question.
Okay, so question two, I have a young child and I'm concerned about what may happen to him if me and my husband were to die. Should I appoint a guardian in my will?
Yes, really something worth considering. So obviously a guardian, it's reserved for someone who is not a parent of your child, but is appointed to be responsible for your child. So in order to appoint a guardian, you must have parental responsibility. And these are all the rights, they're all the duties, they're all the powers, they're all the responsibilities and authority that you have as a parent legally for your child and their property. Guardianship will end when your child reaches 18. So obviously when they become an adult, they won't need it anymore. So in this situation, you know, if your child is 17 years old and they turn 18 tomorrow, this answer might not be as relevant for you, but you say you've got a young child, so I presume they've got a long way to go until they reach 18. So what usually happens when you die? So majority of cases, you know, when a couple has parental responsibility for the child and the first of them dies, then, you know, the other one will step in and continue to care for the child. And that's obviously quite fine. However, in situations where, you know, say if you both died at the same time or very shortly after the other, so you didn't have time to sort of sort that guardianship out, then it is a really important point to consider. So if you appoint a guardian in your will, they will essentially step in your shoes and they'll be responsible for bringing up your child. So obviously this can have implications on finance, you know, it can have social impact, emotional impact. So you do need to be mindful when you're appointing a guardian. So it's always sensible, just have a sit down discussion with your guardian, ensure that, you know, your views align on how your child should be brought up. So for example, to just illustrate this for you, you might have certain views of your child's education. You know, you might want them to go to a private school. You might just want them to go to a state school, both perfectly fine, but you just want to make sure that your guardian's views align with yours. You know, even things such as general upbringing, you know, for example, you might not want your child to watch TV past 9 p.m. at night. Might sound like, you know, quite a minor thing, but it might be important to you. Again, just have a general discussion with your guardian and just let them know these things. So who should you appoint? So the starting point is, you know, someone who is going to act in your child's best interests. Should be someone who has a similar outlook to you, just to avoid any conflicts. It's also sensible just to consider, do they have the experience? Do they have the time to raise your child? You know, it's quite an onerous thing. And you know, you've also got to consider your age of your guardians as well. Because, you know, a lot of people come in and their thoughts are, you know, I'll appoint my parents. They brought me up. I'll appoint them as a guardian. And this is usually fine. But you've got to consider things such as, you know, are they still in good health? Are they potentially too elderly to take on this role? You know, as I say before, it is an onerous role to take on. And you wouldn't want to run the risk, you know, of your guardian having to step down due to ill health or just not being able to carry out the role. Because in that case, then you wouldn't have a guardian. Good point to mention as well is that you can appoint more than one guardian, although it's usually normal to just appoint a couple rather than two separate people. So again, appoint parents as a couple instead of, you know, your brother and then your sister who both live in different households. Obviously, you can see logistics wise, that might not work as well. Obviously, the financial side is a big consideration. So usually guardians don't receive regular payments just for accepting the role. You know, you're not just going to say you get 30 grand a year just for being my guardian. But, you know, any financial obligations for your child must be met by your estate. And how this works in practice is your guardian would approach the trustees of your will and just request those monies that they need. So, you know, in the case where, you know, you really wanted your child to go on a ski trip every year and now the ski trip's come up. And, you know, now your guardian needs to fork out, you know, potentially in the thousands or however much it's going to cost them. They would go to the trustees of your will and ask for that money. That being, you should always discuss with your guardian what might happen if you know, the money ran out in your estate and they need to bear the financial burden themselves. So say if the ski trips come out, but, you know, the estate hasn't got any money left, what would happen in that situation? And, you know, that's a really important thing to consider, because you don't really want your guardian left with that financial burden if they can't pay for it, because then there's obviously, you know, your child is not getting the care that they need. Obviously, substitute guardians as well is another good point to consider. So if you don't appoint a substitute guardian in your will and the original guardian is unable to act, you know, ill health or just a change of mind, then you'll need to amend your will to include a new appointment. So it's always good just to put a substitute guardian in your will in the first place. Then it saves you going back to amend your will. So just always have that backup. And then, you know, if your original guardian can't act, then the substitute can just take, you know, step in, take their position, and then you've got that peace of mind there. That being said, you know, if circumstances arise where the appointment of your guardians, you know, needs to be changed for any reason, then, as I say, you can do this through a codicil or a new will. Obviously, the situation to consider here is what happens if you don't appoint a guardian, and I think this is your situation here. You haven't appointed a guardian yet, so this is obviously, if you don't appoint the guardian, you know, whether through your will or other means, then it's up to the courts to decide where your child should live. And obviously you just don't want it to get to that situation. It could be quite a tricky and difficult time, and you just want that peace of mind and, you know, that security that your child is sorted for after you pass away. So to answer your question, you know, if you've got an existing will with no guardian appointed, then I would go and look into getting that changed, or just bear this in mind if you haven't drafted a will yet. So in this situation, you know, you might not have a will yet. Just bear that in mind. And when you're drafting your will, obviously just explain to your solicitor that you're looking to appoint the guardian, and that will be perfectly fine for them to put in your will. All right. So I think it's time for our final question.
Absolutely. Question 3, my partner and I are getting married next year, but we don't have wills in place. If we made wills now, would they still be valid after our marriage?
Yep. So another good question, because the starting point is, if you marry or enter a civil partnership, then any will you have in place automatically becomes invalid. So if you made a will now, the starting point is, you know, if you made a will now and you married in January in the new year, then that will you've made now as the starting point would be invalid. But the exception to this is if the will's made in contemplation of marriage. So not all is lost. You can still make a will. You can still protect your assets, and it will, you know, you can have that last past your marriage. But there are a few conditions that it needs to go by. So to remain valid after marriage, a will needs to comply with, first of all, your will must state that you're intending to marry and will not be revoked by your marriage. So, for example, you know, you'd be saying along the lines of that at the time of making your will, you expect to be married to Craig and intend that your will shall not be revoked by your marriage to, you know, the said Craig. Secondly, obviously, you need to name the person. So I've mentioned this Craig you're getting married to. So you can't just say that you're expecting to marry in general. You know, you need to name the person. So you can't just say, you know, I've got a feeling that I'm going to marry in 2025. That's just not how it works. And you need to be more specific with it. And, you know, I've mentioned 2025. So with timeframes, you know, it's not just a general, you know, we may get married in the future. You know, you need to state a specific time frame for that. So you need to be engaged, you need to have your wedding planned, and then you just put that in the will. So in practice, you know, when you're making your will, your solicitor will just incorporate a clause in your will, and that will deal with those points I've mentioned above. So it's a very simple wording that they can put in, and then, you know, what that ensures is that your will is valid after your marriage. So definitely something worth looking into. That being said, you know, whilst you're putting this clause in your will and it will be valid after marriage, and that's perfectly fine, when you've had a big life event like a marriage, it's always sensible to just think about whether you need to change your will just to reflect your new status as being married, or, you know, as part of your marriage, you might have bought your matrimonial home, your first home together. Again, these are things to consider, and go back to your will and just think, does this properly reflect my circumstances at the minute. So that's always something to think about. But all in all, you know, if you want to draft a will before your marriage and for it to be valid after, perfectly fine. You know, you can go ahead with that and that will be, you know, very straightforward and it will be valid. All right. So that concludes our questions for this month. I'll now hand you back over to David.
Thanks very much, Ed. Enjoyed listening to those and also being part of that. So thanks very much for letting me do the questions in our December issue. So what do I want to say very quickly for me? As I say at the end of each of these sessions, we continue to work hard to produce, release and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, podcasts, blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And that will, in a few minutes, include all 15 episodes of this live Q&A with Sintons Wills, Trusts and Estates team. If you haven't heard enough from us by that point, you can also follow the team on Twitter at Sintons PC and at Sintons Law. I've just popped Ed's details back on the screen there. If you'd like to discuss anything he's raised any further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with him or a member of the team. Telephone number is there, 01912267855, 7855, and his email, edward.pattinson@sintons.co.uk. That's it from us for this month. That's also it from us for 2023. So just wanted to say a huge thank you for everybody who's sent in questions, who's joined these sessions live. They've grown and grown and grown each month. So thank you for that and for the amount of people who are tuning into them afterwards, whether you're watching them as a video or if you're listening to them as a podcast. Thank you for your engagement. We don't take it for granted. We will see you in January. Have a great festive period, everybody. Stay safe and we'll speak to you in 2024. Thank you.